Now, we come to this section here. It says, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Now, I've been doing some research on that word submit, and I have something rather startling to tell you. Did you know that the word submit in relative to wives is not in some of our better manuscripts? Don't be disturbed. I think it belongs there, but I think it belongs there probably in a little different way than we've had it in the past, where it says, wives, obey your husbands. I don't think that Paul's saying that at all. I totally disagree. I think that this is a very mild word. It's a loving word. And here, what he's really saying is, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands. And what he really means is respond to your own husbands as unto the Lord. Now, the way we respond to the Lord, we love him because he first loved us. Now, in this relationship of man and woman, the man is the aggressor. He's the aggressor physically. He's the one that makes love. And he is the aggressor in the home. He's the breadwinner. He should be. He's the one that goes out with the lunch pail each day. And may I say to you, that doesn't give him any authority that makes him top sergeant in the home either, by the way. Now, the wife is to respond, as the believer is to respond to Christ in the sense that we love him because he first loved us. Now, when a great big brute comes in to me, and as several have done, I never shall forget a great big raw-boned fella came in to me and says, "Now, Dr. McGee, I want you to talk to my wife. She's very cold. She's not acting as a wife should." You know, he didn't know it, but that's a dead giveaway. When a man says that, he's absolutely admitting he's a failure as a husband. Why? Well, for the very simple reason that God never said for her to respond that way to him, except in a cold way, because I asked him. I said, "Have you ever told her lately that you love her?" "Well, no, she knows that," he said. "I don't need to tell her that." And I said, "Well, I think you do." I said, "I don't think she needs to tell you that she loves you until you say it first." And I say the woman is the responder, and the man is the aggressor. And the man is to say, "I love you." And he's the one that does the proposing. He should do the proposing. And she's the one to respond to it. She's the one that says yes or no. And when she says yes, and she says, "I love you." And no woman is asked to say, "I love you," to a man until he says, "I love you." And when a man says, "I got a cold wife," she's got a cold husband. And he's not really being the husband that he should be. And he may be a great big old raw-boned boy like this one was. He was nothing in the world but a great big mama's boy. And he expect her to be the aggressor. May I say to you, that's not her business at all. Now, this is submission. And it's a sweet submission to love, if you please. And the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church. In what way? For the very simple way that it's a love relationship. And the husband is to be the head for the sake of order. And you find that actually in this section here in four different areas. Wives are to be subject to their husbands. Husbands are to be subject to Christ. Children are to be subject to parents. And servants are to be subject to masters. And it's that kind of subjection. It's a sweet subjection. It's a willing subjection. And it's a subjection to somebody that loves you. All of this is that kind of a relationship. And friends, if you don't have love in it, this idea of submission isn't worth the snap of your fingers at all. And let me develop this, as I said that I would. In a marriage, and I've found this to be true, in the marriage counseling that I've done, and I've done a great deal of it in my day, I would say that 75% of the fault is on the side of the man. And it's the man that is to be the one to keep the love light burning, by the way. You remember that in the Song of Solomon, and that's a beautiful thing, the bridegroom says to the bride, says, "Thou art all fair, my love. There's no spot in thee." And then she responds and says, "My beloved is mine, and I'm his." But he said it first, you see. What a beautiful relationship that this is. And now, I know that somebody's going to say to me, "Well, you're very idealistic and you're very romantic about all this." Well, back in the Garden of Eden, God made them that way. God started off with a romantic pair, Adam and Eve. And he didn't give that woman to Adam until he'd been in that garden a long time and saw that he needed someone. And she was given a helpmeet. Well, what's a helpmeet? Well, she's just the other half a man. That's all. And when God joined them together, what did he call them? The Adamses? No, Adam. Man. Man's a half a man. Without the wife, you see. I know that maybe some young girl is saying to me, or some young man, I should say first, "Preacher, I'm not that kind of a person. I'm no hero." Well, may I say to you, young man, God never said that every girl would fall in love with you. 99 women may pass you by and seeing you only the boy next door who uses that greasy kid stuff. That's all. But let me say to you very seriously, one of these days, there'll come by a woman who'll see in you the knight and shine in the armor, and it's God who gives that highly charged chemistry between a certain man and a certain woman. I know that my wife said that to me at the beginning. She thought I was the knight in shining armor, and I want to tell you how it ended up. You know the commercial you see on TV that this knight riding through with this cleanser? And you know where he ended up? In the kitchen. Let me say something to the young woman listening today. She says, "I'm not beautiful, face or figure." Well, let me say this to you. God never said that you'd attract every male. Only animals do that. 99 men are going to pass you by and see in you no more than what Kipling described as a rag of bone and a hank of hair. And a lot of hair today. But one of these days, there's going to come by a man. He'll love you if you're the right kind of person. And you'll become his inspiration. You may inspire him to greatness, to write a book, to compose a masterpiece. If you are his inspiration, do not ignore him. Do not run from him. God may have sent you together for that very purpose. There will come that one. Now, someone is saying again, "Preacher, you're in the realm of theory. What are you talking about? It's idealistic. It sounds good in a storybook. Doesn't happen in life." You're wrong. It does happen. Matthew Henry, who wrote the driest commentary I've ever read in my life, but I want to tell you, he had a very wonderful romantic life as a young preacher. You'd never think, reading his commentary, he was ever romantic, but he was. In London, he met a girl that belonged to the nobility, and a very wealthy girl, and he's just a poor boy. He fell in love with her, and she loved him. And finally, she went to her father to tell him about it, and the father tried to discourage her and said, "Why, that young man has no background. You don't even know where he came from." She answered, said, "You are right. I don't know where he came from, but I know where he's going, and I want to go with him." And she went. Nathaniel Hawthorne, he was a clerk who had a government office in the customs in New York City. And he got fired for inefficiency, and he came home, sat discouraged and defeated in a chair, and his wife came up, put her arm around him and said, "Now, Nathaniel, you can do what you always wanted to do. You can write." And he wrote The House of Seven Gables and The Scarlet Letter and The Great Stone Face and other great works. You see, may I say to you, it does work out in life, by the way. It's worked out in the life of multitudes. And what I'm trying to say is that he's taken an illustration of a Christian home. And he wants that Christian home to be somehow or another a mirror of the relation between Christ and his church.